The following areas for improvement were identified. There was an inadequate directional signage on the floor. This had been identified on the previous inspection. Safe storage of spare parts and broken items was required. The enclosed courtyard and garden required clearing, and top of stairs to remain clear of hoists and other equipment. So they were substantially there.
Now, later in the report, Owen, it points out that all of those issues have been addressed to the satisfaction of HICWA. Risk management, they were judged to be compliant. Infection control, staff used plasters to attach labels to two handheld thermometers, supplies were stored on the floor in two cleaning rooms, skirting board in one cleaner's room required repair, and indeed a repositioning of a hand wash dispenser also required repositioning. All of those later in the report have been addressed as well. In terms of individual assessment and care plans, they were judged to be compliant. In regards to healthcare regulation 6,
yeah, register provider ensured that residents had appropriate access to medical and health care through regular visits from the general practitioner, referrals to allied health professionals and other medical services compliant. Regulation 7, managing behaviour that's challenging. A positive approach to managing responsive behaviours was taken by the registered provider. Again, compliance there.
And as a result, residents, when they required support, were treated with kindness and respecting of staff. Also, protection, residents' rights, all complaint. This is a very positive report, and overall Mount Pleasant Lodge Nursing Home comes out of that HICWA report very well indeed, with a couple of minor decor issues to be addressed. They were addressed when inspectors followed up on that. That unannounced inspection of Mount Pleasant Lodge on the Clane Road in Kilcock took place on July 12th.
Kildare Today with Clem, Owen and Kira.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie.
Okay, now coming up over the next hour, we'll be speaking with the CEO of the Dyslexia Association of Ireland, who feels the Leaving Cert is too narrow and unforgiving. Also, environmental economist at NUIG, Dr. Tom Gillespie, on used car prices now nearly 50% higher than they were just before the start of the pandemic. And then all those new school projects in Naas, Monastrevin, Kilcock, Maynooth, Newbridge, My Valley, Athy, Clane, Enfield, Selbridge and the Curragh receiving funding from the National Development Plan. Liam Kenny, local historian on St. John's Church of Ireland in Kill, which marked its 200th anniversary over the weekend. Let's get some listeners' reaction to what we've been doing since we came on air this morning in terms of Nigel Farage sending a paid birthday greeting. Can you imagine that guy getting paid to send birthday greetings to people and saying up the ra? Mairead McGuinness told Farage and his cronies, go on now and take your flags with you. I loved it, says a listener. Shannon O'Christine says, for me Shantanam, Shannon, Marhastig Omawahir, Antanam Simon, Ahort Elianov, Akastiganam Gwelga Uhi. She wanted an Irish name for me, so it was called that. Simon was the name of his grandfather, or his mother's grandfather, in regards to that. In my family, I'm Michael Sr., and my son is Michael Jr. No problem, we were talking about names. When it came to name our children, says Mick in Kyle Dove, we wanted to give them their own names, as they were their own little selves. We used the names of family members already had as their second names. I completely agree with everything that Professor Ronan Collins has said on the programme this morning. I would also add, I think it's awful when a male carer takes an elderly lady to the bathroom. Their dignity goes out the window, says Maria. Here we go again. Billions and billions in budget will be given into various areas, including the health sector and that. Why are we still doing that, says May, with the results still the same? There is something saying that springs to mind in terms of that the same madness is doing the same thing and again and again and again and expecting different outcome, or expecting the same outcomes or something like that. Anyway, oh my God, Professor Ronan Collins is fantastic. He has hit the nail on the head. Working conditions are so important and are to the forefront in our hospital plights. Well said, Professor Collins. I applaud you. Let's hope it doesn't fall on deaf ears. Another says, oh my God, Professor Collins, what a fantastic speaker. And yet another WhatsApper says, hi Clem, just listening to Professor Collins talking about older people in hospital. Unfortunately, I need to be in hospital often because of ongoing medical problems. And what most old people really hate, especially women in sharing wards. Nowadays, wards are so crowded with no privacy, but it's worse when men and women have to reshare. I really hate it. Clem, that was a great interview with Professor Collins. Heartening to know there are really caring doctors like the professor. It's not always my experience in the public health sector. I have to say he's one of the most impressive guests I've ever had on the programme, and I don't say that lightly. Keep your messages coming in regards to that interview or anything else on the programme. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97. Email studio at kfmradio.com, or you can call us on 045 898 999. Moving on now, the current system of assessment in senior cycle is too narrow and has an unforgiving nature. That's according to the Dyslexia Association of Ireland, whose CEO is Rosie Bizet, who joins me on the line now. Good morning, Rosie.
Good morning to you.
And thank you and for holding on there and waiting as well. Dyslexia, I suppose, most people, I think, at this stage understand what dyslexia actually is. But I suppose if you would like to define it from your perspective.
No problem. But I suppose at its simplest level, it's a difficulty in acquiring fluency and accuracy with literacy tasks, so reading, writing, spelling. But it is broader than that, as in it can also impact on things like working memory, sequencing, and the like. And also then it's very much exacerbated in stressful time situations, which is why, unfortunately, our traditional leaving cert based on a kind of final assessment model one day in June is incredibly undyslexia friendly.
I've always been fascinated by this condition of dyslexia, and I've known many people and encountered them in a professional perspective over decades as well, because the unfortunate thing is that across generations the condition wasn't recognised, and people's inability or struggle with reading or writing, and if I might put it at the most simple level from an experience that I start to learn about, that of reversing letters in some cases. It was often confused with people's level of intelligence, and of course there is no connection whatsoever between the two.
You're absolutely right. We know from the research that there is no link between dyslexia and intelligence. You can be dyslexic and any level of intelligence.
And a genius.
You could be a genius, but you could also be average, like most of us, you know.
Yeah.
So, they're not necessarily dyslexic. They're not necessarily all geniuses. We have that same. There is that same kind of spectrum that you see in the same way that, you know, people who have, red hair are all different as well. You know what I mean? There's one thing that maybe brings people together, but there's also a huge variation within dyslexia. We would talk very much about it is a spectrum condition. You know, it affects people very differently, from very mild to very significantly. And then people have all sorts of other talents and strengths. And I suppose, let's say, our recommendations in relation to leaving cert reform would be very much looking at how we can more so have a more strengths-based system, perhaps with fewer subjects, more strengths-based progression routes, where we're assessing people in different ways, not everything being on that final exam in June, but looking at a variety or a choice of methods of assessment that are perhaps spread out, you know, over the course of the cycle, to really enable people to really show their full potential and give them the best opportunity in terms of progressing, be it to further education and on into work that really suits their own personal strengths.
I'll come to the Leaving Cert in a moment and how that might, you know, address the challenges that people who are dyslexic encounter, irrespective of what point they're on the spectrum. But, you know, so many people, I want to go back to that idea of so many people were stigmatized because they were, quote unquote, bad at spelling, because, quote unquote, they got letters backwards, and they were stigmatized or designated as stupid and whatever else. And is that stigmatization, is there sufficient recognition within the education system, particularly at its most fundamental, at primary level, that, you know, when a person is having difficulty with spelling, it's not necessarily anything to do with their intelligence quotient?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, things have certainly improved, and I suppose that we work with, as an organisation, we work with people of all ages, and we would see that huge emotional, psychological damage and you know, baggage that's carried around by so many adults who were treated terribly in school and made to feel, as you said, the horrible S word, made to feel stupid, made to feel like they were the problem, when in fact it was a system that didn't recognise their way of learning and wasn't supportive of it, you know. So certainly I would say things are better now than they were, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Having said that, our recent research, you know, with teachers would show that we still have a long way to go. Teachers are not getting the level of training that they need in dyslexia, and then even when they do, it tends to be more focused on literacy and not coming at it from a very holistic sense, which we would advocate, where you're not only looking at, okay, how can we help these children with, you know, reading, writing and spelling using evidence-based approaches, but also how do we mind and support their confidence and self-esteem? Because you know yourself, if there's something you're not good at, but suddenly you have to do it all the time publicly in front of others, that's quite challenging, you know. So for example, let's say you're not good at art and you're asked to do art in front of a whole group of people all day every day in school, you know, that does not necessarily do your confidence a great service, you know. So yes, I think there's definitely more training needed for teachers, and also there's more obviously training and support needed around just mental health and confidence building, and helping children with their self-esteem and understanding that difference is a normal part of the human existence, you know, and we should be celebrating it and supporting it and not making it, you know, the fault of the individual because they're different.
Because they, you know, there's people listening to us out there who were stigmatized in the education system because they were bad at spelling, and therefore bad at spelling equal being stupid and whatever else. And, you know, so many people carry that baggage with them throughout their lives. And I have encountered them. And I recall, I worked in the education system decades ago, and I recall one particular student who handed up an essay, and I'd nearly have to sit down and decipher it word by word by word. She was so dyslexic, but she was actually among the top two or three most intelligent in her class,
in the group,
and qualified as one of Ireland's first ever woman engineers. And the last I heard of her was had a senior position in one of the British engineering industries, and it really brought home, you know, this idea that, but I mean, that was an exceptional case. So many children have gone through the system, and just because they couldn't spell, I've had people say to me, I was always put down at school because I couldn't spell. And yet these people had fantastic talents in other areas, as you've pointed out. Now, in terms of the Leaving Cert and even the Junior Cert, which are predicated on being written exams and where you could be judged on how you present your stuff in terms of spelling and whatever else, surely there's more scope in the technological age that we're in nowadays that students would be able to take their exams via audio methods.
Absolutely. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, and look, we know because people are using those technologies, you know, in further education, in the workplace, etc. So absolutely, the potential to do even typing your exams on computer as opposed to handwriting it, for some people, that alone is very helpful because you can, you know, you can reorganize your work, you know, easily. You can use spell checkers. You could potentially dictate as opposed to, handwriting, as opposed to writing it yourself. So there's lots of options there. But at the same time, I think it's not necessarily, it shouldn't all be about timed exams. You know, it could be that we have more continuous assessment, or we have project-based work. We could have oral presentations, you know, so that, or perhaps even a choice, so that you allow people to, perhaps you set an assignment, you set a project, and it could be done in a traditional written form, or it could be delivered as a recorded PowerPoint presentation with an oral speech.
And yet, Rosie Bissett, as CEO of the Dyslexic Association of Ireland, and I'm interested in the statistic, by the way, that approximately one in 10 students are believed to have dyslexia, yet the Teachers Union of Ireland, Michael Gillespie, General Secretary, he was with us on the programme about a week or so ago, he's on another topic, he's warned that a move towards continuous assessment in the Leaving Cert could end up increasing stress for students and lead to over-assessment and undermine public trust. I know he was talking from a different context now in terms of that, but if you're to get progress in what you want, that there be more methods of assessing students than the traditional, what used to be chalk and talk, in this case it's write and scribble and whatever else.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I appreciate that there are obviously other interests, you know, who perhaps are not as motivated, you know, to see change in the system. What I would say is, if you look at, though, the broader education system, and look, obviously, you know yourself, having, as you say, worked with, in, let's say, adult further education, etc., our second level system is unique, you know, in the broader education system, in almost resisting continuous assessment and resisting teachers correcting their students' work. When all of these students go on to further education university, their work is corrected by their teachers who are working with them, okay? And there are processes put in place, be that you know, external validation, a certain amount of auditing to maintain the system. So there are ways that that can be done. It's also being done in other second level systems in other jurisdictions. You know, so I think it's not that this can't be done and isn't being done. This is absolutely possible, you know, and I think the issue of, I certainly would not accept that it increases stress, because all I think what we have at the moment is incredible stress placed on students with final exams. If that stress is spread out, you're diluting it. You know, each individual project or piece that you do gradually over the course of your senior cycle is lesser in its stress, as opposed to heaping it all into one morning, one afternoon in June at the end of your senior cycle.
And I think that particular rationale doesn't just apply to people who might be dyslexic, whatever point of the spectrum they're on. It applies to everybody who's ever sat to leave in certain. And we all remember the nightmare that was. I think it's good to heighten awareness of that. And all of you listening out there who were told you were stupid because you couldn't spell, ignore it. It's absolutely no connection between the two things. And we all have myriad talents. And, you know, they address different aspects and sectors of our life. And that applies to every single one of us. Rosie Bissett is CEO of the Dyslexic Association of Ireland on that issue, saying that the Leaving Cert is too narrow and unforgiving, and looking for alternative means of assessing, and not just those with dyslexia, but especially those, but also everybody in the system would benefit from it. Rosie, good talking to you.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, the price of used cars is nearly 50% higher now than they were just before the onset of the pandemic. So in the 3 months since June this year, prices of used cars have increased by 10.6%. Joining me now is Dr. Tom Gillespie, environmental economist with NUIG and author of this latest Dunedeal Car Price Index. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. First question, Dr. Gillespie, I should say, sorry. On average, what age are these used cars? Because someone could buy a 211 in July 2021, and that is technically a used car by that stage.
We're not using new cars in the analysis. It would just be used cars. So anything that's, you know, at least a couple of months old with a certain...
But that's exactly what... So if you buy a 211 in July, it is a used car at that stage because it's a 212. So what are we speaking about, 10-year-old cars? Give us some sort of ballpark there.
So, well, when we look at the analysis and we break it down by the kind of either end of the market, we see the biggest inflation in the market in the lower end of price category. So we're seeing a much higher inflation in the lower end of the market than in the upper end of the market. The prices are going up in all ends of the market, but it's most pronounced in the lower end of the market, in around the kind of 3,000. And that's primarily because in the boom years, there was in the 05, 06, 07, 08 cars, there was a boom in new car registrations, and that surplus stock of cars have been traded in the Irish car market for the last 10 or 15 years, but they're starting to become obsolete now. A lot of them are dropping out of the market because they're obsolete.
And is this a surprise to dealers and to, you know, companies like Dundeal? Because we know that the electric cars, a lot of people are interested in them, but in conversation I do have with people, the same thing people say is, oh, we're not there yet. So it seems as if people don't need to worry in terms of selling their secondhand cars, as people are ready to grab the petrol diesel cars, even though we know that we're moving towards an electric car world.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's still quite a small share. It's still a very small share of the used car market will be electrics and hybrids. And so there's still a huge demand. The demand for a car, a new car, in the majority of cases, is fed by the used car market. So there's still... You know, although a lot of new car registrations, the share of new car registration for electric cars is going up quite rapidly, there's still a huge amount of used cars. That's the majority of the sales that happen.
So why are we seeing this huge increase, this 50% increase?
So it's a combination of supply and demand, like with most economic phenomena. So on the supply side, there's a global shortage of these semiconductors, which are these microchips that go into computers, and they go into everything these days. And it's no different with cars. All new cars need these microchips because for all the components on board. But because there was this big supply shortage, and not necessarily due to the pandemic, but there was these big factories around the world had to close for periods of time, like because of weather and stuff. In Texas, there was a big freeze. In Taiwan, there was a fire. And there was a drought. Stuff like that. So these big factories, they have to be produced on scale. Had to close down, and this caused a big shortage of semiconductors, and this has had a big knock-on effect.
Okay, so, in terms of imports, people obviously heading up north to buy cars, Brexit, what effect has that had on the situation?
Yeah, well, so that's another side of the supply thing. So, you know, there's a big supply shortage globally, so in a lot of the used car markets around the world, they're seeing these big price inflation, but Ireland is unique because it has the compounding effect of Brexit. So, you know, we get a huge amount of our additional cars every year from UK imports of used cars. But that's you know, almost half now because of VAT. So we have a big strain on supply in Ireland, especially because we drive on the left-hand side of the road, like so does the UK, and we can't get our cars off the continent. So this is why we've seen this big strain in supply. So it's very difficult for dealers to get cars at the moment.
Okay.
And then also... On the demand side of things, you know, people have more money in their pockets. Since the pandemic, there's been more of a reliance on cars, especially in rural areas where public transport has been limited. Mm-hmm. So you have demand going up and supply being choked, which is causing this big price rise.
Yeah, and a lot more people don't feel as confident getting on public transport, obviously, with an airborne virus around the place. But listen, Dr. Tom Gillespie, environmental economist with NUIG and author of this latest Dundeal Car Price Index. Thanks so much.
Tom, could I ask you one question? It's Clem here, and in regards to that, have you established whether there's any clear connection between the fact that these better prices are being paid for second-hand cars by dealers, let's say, when I go in to trade my car, and the traditional discounts we'd get against new cars? Is it a case of smoke and mirrors, I wonder?
So in terms of the dealers themselves?
Yeah, what I'm trying to get at there is that the improved prices that your report on Dundeal is showing for second-hand cars, when we go into trade in, is the actual improvement in our second-hand trade in, is that mirrored in the deal we're getting when we go in for new cars or whatever? I don't know if you might have investigated that end of things.
Well, I mean, I'd have to hypothesize about that, but I mean, if you're going in, the dealers are struggling to get cars. I mean, most dealers will tell you that they find it very, like, they're selling out their entire stock and they're trying to get new cars. So you definitely have bargaining power, increased bargaining power now when you go to a dealer and you want to trade in. I mean, you can demand more for their trade in than you would have been able to before.
And did your research reveal anything in terms of a profile of the types of cars? Is it across the entire second-hand sector?
So yeah, like I said, we looked at the distribution of price and how that's, and you can break down different prices and look at their index. So it's the lower end of the market that's really seeing the big price inflation, and the upper end of the market is it's a much more modest quarterly inflation of 3.9%, which is still quite a lot in considering. But the upper end of the market isn't seeing the same kind of price rises. And also, new cars aren't really, their prices haven't really moved that much. So relative to used cars, new cars are quite good value at the moment.
It's interesting that your report reveals that just since June of this year, used car prices have increased by 10.6%. That's quite a remarkable rise in terms of that. And you mentioned there the shortage of it was at semiconductors worldwide, which of course is a very important factor in the manufacture of cars. Is there any relief from that particular shortage on the horizon, do you think? Or will this ongoing rise in second car prices continue throughout 2021, maybe into 2022 even?
I mean, yeah, so what experts are saying about semiconductors is that it won't be going back to normal anytime soon in the short term. I mean, it might be sometime late next year before, the semiconductor factories have caught up with demand. So, yeah. That's certainly causing the strain in new car prices. In terms of imports, then we're still seeing the issue with the UK. So, it's hard to speculate. I can't see the curve flattening anytime soon.
All right. Well, at least for once, those people going in to trade in their Glouchtons are on a somewhat higher ground than they would have previously, where dealers would be marking you down on every little excuse or spot they would see in the cars. Now you can march in there and you can command, it seems, a premium deal in terms of trading in your car. And that's that new report which has been carried out for Dundeal by Dr. Tom Gillespie, environmental economist at NUIG and author of that particular report. Thank you, Tom, for that this morning. And
thanks for having me.
You're welcome indeed, and good morning to you.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Right, by the way, just in regards to another item out of that report that we're talking about there in regards to used cars, according to the Dundeal report by Dr. Gillespie, Japanese used car imports are up 65% from 3,243 in 2019 to 6,068 so far now in 2021. I know it might be a small number in terms of the overall total of stuff, but given Brexit, that it's no longer as attractive to bring cars in from Northern Ireland or indeed from the UK, Japanese car imports are making their mark again. I remember some years ago there was a huge input and influx of Japanese second-hand cars into the market. That seemed to die away. But anyway, if you've got the good old second-hand car and it's in good condition at the moment, hang on to it because it could be worth indeed dealing with that. A couple of quick messages. Good morning, Clem, says Rob Dunn in Robertstown. There are amazing services available for any sort of learning disorders. However, getting access to the services is the problem. My daughter was flagged for possible dyslexia and ASD when she was 5. She finally got a date for her appointment for the 20th of this month. She's now 12. 7 years, lads. Can you imagine that in regards to what Professor Ronan Collins was talking about earlier on? Morning, Clem. Could the local council give out flyers to local residents to encourage them not to put out rubbish for bonfires in Ballycane? The fire has been lit for the last 3 nights. It's a mess up here with bike wheels, draining boards, sinks, wire. It's a disgrace, says a listener. Didn't know about that. The bonfire's already been lit for Halloween. We'd urge everybody in all communities not to be dumping stuff out for use in bonfires, just damaging to the environment. Cars will be cheaper as they could be imported directly from EU companies or EU countries than that. Yeah, I'm not so sure, but what's the point in importing cars from EU countries, Shannon? They all drive on the other side of the road. So no point importing a car where the steering wheel would be on the wrong side of the road to us here. Anyway, let's move on because there's been a lot of new school projects flagged for Kildare in the present National Development Plan 2021 to 2030, which was announced recently. The publication of the plan is giving funding of over 4.4 billion euro for investment in school infrastructure during the period 2021 to 2025. Approximately 1,200 school building projects are currently in progress across the country, across the various stages of planning, design and construction. And indeed, many of them are in Kildare, Owen Beattie.
Yeah, absolutely. And it hits on all four corners of the county as well. So just run down through the list of the school projects here in Kildare. In the Mercy Convent in Naas, the primary school, there's a new school building going in there. Skull Evin, Naifa and St. Peter's National School in Monastrevin Primary School, new school building there as well. Skull na Shunta Nave Fader in Monastrevin as well, primary school, new school building. So two new school buildings going into the town of Monastrevin. In Kilcock, St. Joseph's National School getting a new school building, as is the Maynooth Boys National School getting a new school building as well. In terms of extension and refurbishment, St. Conlett's and St. Mary's in Newbridge, the primary school there, and also St. Conlett's Infant School in Newbridge, while Cadamstown National School in Moy Valley, they're getting an extension, the primary school. Skull Vickle Neafa in Athy Primary School getting extension and refurbishment. A couple more extensions then in Naas and in Enfield. This is at Tiermohan National School in Naas, Newtown National School in Enfield, both getting extensions. St. Anne's Special School in the Curragh at Ballymoney Cross there, that's a special education school, new school building. Also St. Mark's Special School in Newbridge is getting a new school building, as is St. Patrick's Boys National School in Clane, and Maynooth Primary Gaelscoil Rory in Maynooth. Then if we turn our attentions to post-primary schools, Salesian College getting an extension in Selbridge, St. Paul's Secondary School in Monastrevin, a new school building. Athy Community College in Athy is getting an extension and refurbishment, while there's three new school buildings going in around the county, two in Maynooth, Maynooth Post Primary and Maynooth Community College, while at Naas Community College, just down the road from us there in Naas on the Millennium Road, they're getting a new school building as well.
Indeed, in Craddock's Town. And just noticing there, Maynooth Post Primary School and Maynooth Community College getting new schools. Of course, there's been a huge amalgamation and stuff going on in Maynooth in recent times. But that's quite a considerable amount of schools that are happening in Kildare. Most of them across the primary sector, whether new schools or primary schools, and three or four across the post-primary sector. And the two special ones, Owen, I think we should mention, St. Anne's Special School at Ballymoney Cross in the Curragh and St. Mark's Special School in Newbridge. Both of those are special education centres.
Yeah, yeah, and they do great work. I mean, we've covered it on the programme previously with a couple of councillors, and Senator Fiona O'Loughlin, I know, works closely with St. Anne's Special School and St. Mark's as well. So good to see them getting a new school building, and hopefully that will increase the amount of people who can attend these schools, because that's one of the problems that come to the forefront when we talk to parents, is that getting their children into school, particularly special educational schools. So hopefully this will see increased capacity.
All right, keep your messages coming. 0833, thanks Owen, 97 97 97. Email studio at kfmradio.com. You can call us on 045 898 999. Now, we're going to be heading to do a little bit of history in a moment, but something that I've been meaning to refer to for a couple of days is I got a lovely book from Florence Grace. She's written this herself. She's in Rathsalla in Dunlavin, and she said, "Dear Clem, when it looked like our dreaded visitor was likely to hang around longer than expected, that is, the COVID pandemic, I decided to write a little something to pass on to children and mainly grandchildren. My friend Gina was happy to illustrate, and so The Secret Labyrinth was born." That's the name of the book. "Not being very tech savvy, it was a rather challenging project. It was even more challenging to get it published. In fact, husband Seamus had a lot of persuasion to do. With lots of help from the crew in Naas Printing, it reached fruition. I had no plans to make it available to the public, but after speaking to the teachers in Skull Nicklaus Nefa, where I taught once upon a time, over there in Dunlavin, where I thought we decided to print extra and raise some funds for Solace ASD unit. People have been hugely supportive, and we've only 30 or so left. So maybe if you have a minute to give it a mention, I would be extremely grateful. It's available in Unlore in Dunlavin, the school, and Woodbine in Kilcullen. In our 70s, by the way, huge thanks in anticipation to Florence Grace. Now, Florence, first of all, you have beautiful writing, I have to say. And you remind me your writing very like my mother's writing. And is that a thing we have lost? You know, I'm a scribbler. I absolutely will not, I'll hold my hands up on that. I'm a complete scribbler. Owen and Ciara will often say, we can't read a word you're writing, Clem. Where did you get that? But you see, unlike the tech kids nowadays who walk into lectures with computers, when I went into lectures in university, there were no computers. And you had a guy or a woman standing up at a table, 300 of us in the room, they were standing at a podium, and they delivered an hour-long lecture in normal speed. And you had to write down every bloody word of it.
Don't be making up excuses now.
So you became a scribbler. And whatever else. And I have to say, I love the writing. But I even, Florence Grace in Ratsala, over in Dunlavin, I even love your book more. Beautiful book, The Secret Labyrinth, illustrations by Gina Grace. It's directly aimed at children. And the proceeds of it will be donated to the Solace unit, which deals with children with ASD, in Skolniklaus Neva in Dunlavin. I'll read you the first page. And beautifully illustrated by Gina Carl, I have to say. Most mystical stories begin with long, long ago, but not this one. Now and at this moment, there is a secret labyrinth in... Well, I can't tell you where it is, because it's a secret. The labyrinth is underground, wherein live seven magical people. Foya is the wise woman who has the wisdom of all the people who ever lived there. And the labyrinth has been there a very long time. Limash is the keeper of the lands all round, the fields, mountains, bogs and forests. Five children, Ridjan, Naith, Nahan, Ukla and Rusheim, have been chosen to help take care of the earth and its creatures. And so the story goes on and on. Beautiful, and how attractive that would be for everyone. So it's available in the Unlore in Dunlavin, at the local school, Skolniklaus Neva, and also at Woodbine in Kilcullen, if anyone would like to buy that for the kids. Right. Well done, Florence Grace, and thank you for your letter and the beautiful script you have as well. And well done to the husband, Seamus, for helping out, and Nace Print for printing it as well. Kudos all round to everyone. And kudos indeed to Kill Church of Ireland, Liam Kenny, because they celebrated 200 years at the weekend.
Good morning, Clem. Yes, Church of Ireland in Kill. You know, when your listeners are driving up the dual carriageway, be it from Newbridge, be it from Athy, be it from Kilcullen, be it from Naas, and the last landmarks they see in County Kildare before they leave the county are the twin towers of the churches in the village of Kill, the square tower of St. Bridget's Catholic Church and the spire of St. John's Church of Ireland. And both of them, remarkably, are marking their bicentenaries this year. It's most unusual for two churches of different creeds, different congregations, in the same village to be marking their bicentenaries in the same year. And the St. John's Church bicentenary was marked on Sunday morning last in a lovely ceremony conducted by Reverend Philip Heek, the rector. A great man on the Illan pipes. You might have him on your traditional music programme someday.
I have had him in the past, yes. He's a very, very great, accomplished Illan piper.
A man of many talents, and assisted by Reverend Olive Hennessy, would be well known to your Athy listeners. And a lovely harvest festival type service. And part of the celebration was the launch of a lovely booklet. In fact, booklet is understating it. A proper little book on the story of St. John's, the chief contributor being Kill's ecumenical historian, Brian McCabe, who has also contributed greatly to a forthcoming history of St. Bridget's Catholic Church. And other contributors were the Gillespies, Dermot and Terence, Stephen O'Byrne, Jackie Shaliner, Tony Keane, photographer with the Leinster Leader for many years, and others. And I've made a lovely little booklet, you know, recalling the history of this picturesque church in Kildare's tidy towns, winning village of Kill, over the years.
And Liam, is there an association with that church by the wonderful legend that is Mabel Lyons?
Yes, there is an association.
Whom we spoke to on this programme, I think she was about 100 at the time, or close to
And
it.
I'm delighted to say that present at the ceremony in Kill on Sunday morning was Mabel Lyons. And Mabel, as you say, you spoke to her about April of this year when she reached her centenary. And, you know, it's extraordinary to think that we're looking at the story of a church that's been there for 200 years, and to see in a living, vibrant, vivacious person the story of 100 of those 200 years embodied in the person of Mabel Lyons.
Absolutely. She was one of the most inspiring and remarkable women, and there were convoys by the Gardaí up to the door to celebrate her birthday and bringing goodies and stuff like that. And Mabel told us, of course, and she's an independent, very independent lady, and she had links to the Isle of Man, CC, through her brother as well.
Very much so, and documented in the booklet here, her brother Ernie Lyons, of course, you know, set the bonfire blazing in Kill when he won the 1946 Isle of Man TT. Tearing around the Isle of Man in oilskins and goggles in the rain. And Miles na Gcapailín remarked of him as the Flying Irishman.
Indeed.
And he came back. And, of course, went on then to great, if you like, innovation and industrial success. He was effectively the founder of what we now know as Cement Roadstone. Pioneering work in the quarries there in Kill, the perfection of the concrete block and so on. All down to the Lyons innovation.
The Lyons innovation and Mabel. So back to the church, Liam, then, and the celebration of its bicentenary. Is that what you call it?
The bicentenary. 200 years. Yes. It was built in its present form, 1820, 1821. Greatly renewed then in 1883. And, you know, it has many kind of curiosities. It has a wonderful old organ where the keys, people who know about music will know that the keys on an organ, the ebony and the ivory. But in Kill Church, the ebony and ivory keys are reversed.
So the ivory keys are ebony and the ebony keys are ivory.
Yes,
the colours are reversed, right.
Which is significant for people who are into music notation. There are also some wonderful plaques in the church to some of the personalities in the locality, one of them being the Earl of Mayo, who in the early years of the Irish Free State, and we're coming up to the centenary of the founding of the Irish State in 1922, and he was both a member of the House of Lords and a member of the new Irish Senate simultaneously for a number of years.
And
there are not too many public figures straddled politics on the Irish Sea in that turbulent time.
All right, it's remarkable for the community. We're going to have to leave it there, Liam. But when is the Catholic Church celebrating its bicentenary?
It's this year as well, and I understand that the booklet has been prepared and will no doubt be launched in some form in the remaining weeks of this year.
Indeed.
But as I say, your listeners, and many of them I know, travel the N7 there, and when they drive from Dublin, you pass the Welcome to Kildare scene, and the next sign, the next two landmarks you see are the twin towers of the churches in Kill, and they can contemplate how both are celebrating their bicentenaries this year.